Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:07 p.m. on Friday, April 15, 2022. Before we begin, I want to thank Shannon McCain, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings. And Talia Ames, that's what I thought, but I was like, oh my gosh, not the script. And the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phone. Present today, we have Representative Eastman on teleconference, Representative Christ Tompkins on teleconference, Representative Drummond is here, Representative Kirka on Teams, Representative Snyder by teleconference, and myself, Representative Klayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is confirmation hearings. The Speaker has referred the following governor's appointments to the Judiciary Committee for the Alaska Police Standards Council. Members have received resumes or applications for each appointee. The appointees are online and will testify. We will now open public testimony. All the appointees are on the phone. Please make sure you are not on a speakerphone, as the sound quality is not as clear and it is often difficult to hear what you're saying. Mr. Brown, if you are online, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jeffrey Brown. I've been appointed to the Alaska Public Standards Council, and I'm currently in Utqiagvik, Alaska. I began my law enforcement career over 20 years ago in Virginia and moved to Alaska in 2006, where I've served in various capacities with the North Slope Borough Police Department and the Alaska Department of Public Safety's Office of Professional Standards. Currently reside in Utqiagvik, serving as the Chief of Police for the North Slope Borough Police Department. My varied experience in public safety gives me a unique and well-rounded perspective on law enforcement that makes me well-suited for carrying out the Council's mission. I want to thank you for your consideration and support. I'm available to answer any questions that you may have.
So I always start out with the same question for all. Are you currently on the Police Standards Council, and if so, how long have you served?
I am newly appointed, subject to confirmation.
Any other questions from members of the committee? And if you're either online or on Teams, please speak up. Don't wait for me to see you because I can't really tell. All right, I don't.
Representative Eastman, question.
Please proceed, Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Based on your experience in the law enforcement arena, where would you encourage the council to look first when it comes to improving recruitment and retention?
Thank you. Through the chair, thank you, Representative Eastman. So, for recruitment and retention, definitely two different subjects there. In terms of the recruitment areas, it is extremely difficult. Just talking kind of from the perspective of the North Slope Borough, but I know other departments are in the same boat, where essentially as a result of a lot of the things that occurred really down the lower 48, so to speak, finding good qualified law enforcement applicants has been difficult, and we're all essentially competing within the same applicant pool here within the state. Best way, I think, to go about kind of the recruitment is by targeting areas in the lower 48 that are not so friendly towards law enforcement. That has been successful. Essentially, in Alaska, we are still very much supported by the community kind of everywhere. Oftentimes that is what officers are simply looking for, is that knowing that the support is there. In terms of retention and stuff, that's where continuing the momentum we already have towards our standards of training throughout the state well equips us. And again, it's that level of professionalism and dedication that the officers have, that's truly what they're looking for, is that standard of training and that standard of professionalism that already exists here in the state, and we continue to kind of grow that and solidify that throughout the state. So in a nutshell, I believe from my perspective, that's kind of where it's at. And again, we have to target through pay and benefits and all that sort of stuff that comes.
Follow up.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chair. You know, periodically, at least once a year, I receive queries from military law enforcement or former military law enforcement who are considering going into civilian law enforcement here in Alaska. And they run into various obstacles. Some of their, you know, military service isn't counted as far as law enforcement, so forth. I'm wondering, do you have any perspectives on whether the standards that the council has for those military law enforcement are something that could be improved?
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you again, Representative Eastman. So, and I know some of your background within military service, within the MPs, and certainly I would say your traditional definition of what an MP is versus what the standards council or what a police officer is or a peace officer within the state of Alaska are two very different things. I certainly think as a result of kind of a new mission set that's kind of your wartime MP and those patrol tactics and some of the investigative skills that were developed during that time frame, I believe there is the potential there of looking at, dependent upon what the individual was doing, and that's where I think it would be an individual's resume and or the personal history statement that gets turned in by that individual MP that should be evaluated on a case-by-case basis to determine how much of that meets kind of the definitions of a peace officer in terms of that bleed over. Again, there's a huge difference between MP duties if you're simply guarding a gate versus if you're actively out there investigating crimes, like oftentimes MPs and, you know, your security forces for the Air Force, so on and so forth are doing. So it is dependent, and I think it is a case-by-case basis. But there is room there, certainly, to evaluate.
Thank you very much.
Chair Klayman, this is Brett Snyder.
Please proceed.
Thank you. I imagine I'll ask some version of this question to our various appointees. You know, recently we had, I think unfortunate would be a charitable description of the incident we've learned about in Wasilla lately with a young student with autism, and some of the initial response is we could use some additional training in de-escalation tactics. And I'm just curious about how you might respond to situations such as those and what the role of the Police Standards Council would be to ensure that we don't have more similar incidents moving forward.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Snyder. So certainly speaking from the North Slope Borough perspective, again, we do de-escalation training that we received based on a federal standard that we received, to where we have trainers in that, and we do train de-escalation techniques. Ensuring that those strategies are taught in the academy, which to my understanding it is, so that covers your new recruits, but then you also have to look at those of us that it's been quite some time since we've been through the academy, and that's where ensuring through Standards Council that ongoing training and having these topics, as well as Standards Council actually providing that training within the state of Alaska, becomes very important. I know from a regulatory standpoint, there's been conversations about developing kind of a standardized in-service training thing, and that is something we didn't want to do a knee-jerk reaction on that, because it needs to be a well thought out process, because I could tell you there's a huge difference in providing training to my officers up here on the slope versus Anchorage or on the road system. There's just, there's the difficulties that are involved there. So ensuring that whatever is implemented is well thought out and works is extremely important. And I believe that's where the role of the Standards Council would step in.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Paula, I'm sorry.
Is that Representative Eastman a follow-up question?
Yes, if no one else is in the queue.
Please.
Thank you, through the chair. I was wondering if you have had any experience either recruiting or working with homeschool graduates in law enforcement, and whether or not you think there's value in treating them differently in the recruiting process.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Eastman. Just to clarify, you said recruitment of homeschool applicants, is that correct?
Yes, homeschool graduates applying for law enforcement positions.
Thank you very much. Through the chair. So we do have on staff, I want to say at least two homeschool individuals that I'm aware of here, both from within the state, within my department. In terms of any special need kind of in reviewing that, I don't believe anything is necessary. Again, there is a standard of education that's met through homeschooling, and I don't know that there's necessarily a need to treat them any differently than anyone else from my perspective, at least the applicants that we received. Again, they've been with our department for quite some time and very astute and, again, unique backgrounds and perspectives that comes along with that. I hope that answered your question. I'm not sure that there's a need to kind of look at or treat them differently, at least that I'm aware of.
Thank you very much. No further questions.
Quick question that I had on the recruitment. In your perspective, what is the role of retirement plans, specifically pension, the lack of a pension in Alaska, as well as how is that impacting recruitment and retention and salary levels?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the question. So I am a Tier 3 individual myself, and I know that is extremely beneficial. Certainly speaking and watching people come and go that are Tier 4 individuals where there, I don't want to say isn't an incentive to stay, but, you're right upon that language there to where, again, anything the state can do to help incentivize staying within the state to where there is that targeted goal to work towards is extremely beneficial. Looking at our department in general, between the rotation program and then just the tiered status, you know, within the next 3 years, I probably have a solid, 75% of my department that are going to be eligible for retirement. So those are individuals that we've retained that are all Tier 3 individuals that will be coming close on their 20 years, and there aren't that many Tier 4 and beyond that exist. They kind of come and go. Now, don't get me wrong, the other 20-30% of my department is made up that way, but certainly they seem to come and go a lot more frequently than the Tier 3 and before.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for Mr. Brown? Hearing and seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Brown. Next online, we have Mr. Michael Craig. Mr. Craig, if you please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Craig. I've been in Alaska since 1963. I currently work for the Alaska Pipeline Service Company. I've been on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System since 1983. My position at this point is in the Business Practice Office as an Employee Concerns Coordinator. And in that role, we do code of conduct investigations, conflict resolution, that sort of thing, which is somewhat consistent with parts of the Alaska Police Standards Council role in seeing those same types of things, but just with law enforcement and corrections officers as well. Within the Alaska Police Standards Council, I've been a public member since 2017. I fulfilled a kind of a year appointment after somebody left a little bit early, and then I had a full appointment through that's running through now. So I'm seeking reappointment in that capacity. Ready for questions if there are any.
You already answered my question. I ask everybody, so I don't have any questions. Questions from members of the committee?
Representative Eastman, a question.
Please.
Thank you. I'm wondering, in your experience in law enforcement, I know there are just like with folks working on the slope in the oil industry, there are folks that live out of state and work in state, you know, a couple weeks at a time, or some kind of variation of that. I'm just wondering if you have any experience are aware of that, and if that's the model in your view that, you know, has worked or hasn't worked, or any thoughts you might have.
So through the chair, and thank you very much for the question, Representative Eastman. I am not in law enforcement, and I have not had any law enforcement experience. In my capacity throughout working on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, I have been a liaison with federal, state, and local law enforcement and have interacted with them on a number of occasions, whether that be in meetings or drills or exercises or that sort of thing. So I don't really have a feel for the question from the standpoint of law enforcement. And predominantly, the people that work on the pipeline are Alaska residents. There are definitely some who aren't. And I think the my particular preference would be that we have Alaska residents in all of these positions, but understand particularly when the pool gets shrunk to whatever degree that we do have to look in other directions to fulfill some of these positions. Hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Craig? Last chance. Any other questions for Mr. Craig? Hearing and seeing none. Thank you very much, Mr. Craig. Next we have David Knapp. Mr. Knapp, if you would please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Hello and good afternoon. My name is Staff Sergeant David Knapp. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I grew up in Skagway, and now I live in Palmer. I'm here today because I've been reappointed to the Alaska Police Standards Council. I am just finishing up a four-year term, so if confirmed, this will be my second 4 years. I'm employed by the Alaska Department of Corrections as a correctional officer. I've been with Alaska DOC for 17 years. During this time, I've been assigned to multiple institutions, but for the previous 5 years, I've been assigned to the Prisoner Transportation Unit. In this capacity, I perform several unique and specialized positions, unlike other correctional officers. One is that I manage the prisoner telephone system. Another is that I am the department gang coordinator. And this entails identifying and monitoring gang members and gang activity within our institution. And I also supervise our canine unit. I also teach a gang class at our basic academies, and I assist our academy team with firearms instruction and other training help when it's needed. Thank you for your time, and I'll answer any questions now.
And again, you answered my initial question, so I have no questions. Any questions for other members of the committee?
Representative Eastman, question.
Please proceed.
Thank you, and through the chair. Curious to know if you have any impressions or thoughts as far as what are the urgent needs that the Standards Council should be tackling, you know, over the next 1 to 2 years.
Thank you for your question and through the chair. I think right now we've been trying to work through a lot of regulation changes that have been proposed. Due to COVID, haven't met in person much over the last 2 years, so we have a huge backlog of work to do to get through those regulation changes. So that, to me, is the number one issue we're dealing with right now.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is
Rep. Snyder. Please proceed.
Thank you. Tagging on to that question just a little bit, you know, we've been working on HB 172 with respect to crisis now and changing some of the ways that we respond to Alaskans in need. Would you anticipate upon the passage of that bill any needs or work to come out of the council here to ensure that we're able to I'm not wording this very well, we're making some changes in how we respond to Alaskans in crisis, and I'm curious what your perspective is on how your council might contribute to those changes. Do you anticipate any work on that front?
Absolutely. I believe the council needs to you know, we have to evolve our training with, you know, current standards and the changing people that are encountered. For instance, there's a lot more mentally ill people that are that law enforcement has contact with, and you know, drug induced psychosis in a lot of cases. And so this is something that has to continually evolve, and the council has to stay on top of it and make sure that we are providing good guidance and training for these issues that are changing rapidly. Thank you.
No follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I ask you the same question I asked Mr. Brown, Mr. Knapp. The lack of a pension, what's your perspective on how not having a pension impacts recruitment and retention of law enforcement officers?
I think it's the number one issue. Thank you for the question, and through the chair, sorry. I think it's the number one issue with recruitment and retention. In my career, I've seen hundreds of correctional officers hire on, get vested after 5 years, and then leave. We see very few of them go beyond the five-year mark, and so that's by far the biggest issue we're facing in terms of retention. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And
Representative Eastman, a question.
Representative Eastman, please proceed.
Thank you, and through the chair. I'm curious to know, in the event that there's a complaint that's brought forward to the council and there's enforcement proceedings against a law enforcement member, in your experience, have those proceedings been conducted timely? What's your impression on how quick and efficient that process is?
Thank you for the question. And through the chair, in my experience, I find the process to be very streamlined, very quick. You know, there are some delays, but they're not due to the council. They could be because of legal representation or whatnot. But I feel the process works very well, and I fully support it, how it works.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Knapp? Hearing and seeing none, Mr. Knapp, thank you very much for joining us today. And last but certainly not least, we have David Ross. Mr. Ross, if you want to state your name for the record, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Dave Ross. I'm the police chief for the city of Kenai. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today for consideration for my appointment. My appointment is to the Police Standards Council for one of the four police chief positions on the council. As I said, I'm currently the police chief in Kenai. I've been at the Kenai Police Department going on 21 years, with almost 6 years as the police chief. My entire law enforcement career has been at the Kenai Police Department, where I've filled all the roles from police officer to investigator to sergeant to lieutenant and now the chief. I've lived in Kenai for over 50 years, since 1971. I look forward to my role on the council as an opportunity to help continue to address the need for a very professional and well-trained law enforcement workforce in Alaska. I'm honored to be considered for the position, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
I think I know the answer, but are you a new appointment, or are you currently serving?
Chair, I'm a new appointment, pending confirmation.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for Mr. Ross?
Representative Easton, question.
Please proceed.
Through the chair, what role do you see the council playing in the way in which the public views law enforcement in Alaska, if any?
So, Representative Eastman, through the chair, my perspective on the council is that it needs to develop and maintain, as it has, good hiring practices for law enforcement professionals. It needs to have good systems in place to certify and decertify, so we only keep the right people in law enforcement, and it needs to help provide quality ongoing training. And that's how it serves the people of Alaska, to ensure we get and keep the right people and train them.
Thank you.
Mr. Ross, I'll ask the same question I've asked others. What's your perspective on the lack of a pension system, and how, what is your perspective on the lack of a pension system on recruitment and retention of public safety officers?
So, Chair, recruitment and retention is a challenge across law enforcement for sure, and I would say definitely on the retention end, a pension system plays a role. As Chief Brown said, our agency is similar. We have a lot of, or several folks that are at the end of the Tier 3 system that make up most of the administration of this police department. And then there's a gap of many years of experience down to most of the rest that are Tier 4 because they're not, don't seem to be staying as long. There's a lot of reasons people leave law enforcement, and there's a lot of reasons for us to want to keep them because of the immense amount of training and the valuable experience they get over the years. So I think that if you talk to the Tier 4 people in our building, that there's a lot of benefit to them to potentially a pension system that would set a year out there that's the goal to stay to more than a Tier 4 system.
And what tier are you?
Tier 3.
Thank you. Any other questions for Chief Ross? All right, hearing and seeing none, I'm going to open up public testimony. Thank you very much, Mr. Ross. We're going to move to public testimony. I don't see anyone in the room here to testify, and I don't see anyone online here to testify. I'm getting a head shake from the back that I'm reading the computer screen right. Since hearing and seeing no one for public testimony, I'm going to close public testimony. And unless there's any other questions for any of the nominees, for members of the committee. Going on. I'll give members 3 minutes to make comments if you'd like. And as today, I'm going to start with Representative Eastman. Any comments about it, any or all of the four applicants? And we're limiting to 3 minutes.
My comment would be thank you to each of those who come today and volunteered to serve or continue serving in these positions. The Standards Council is one of the organizations that I do receive feedback from constituents on somewhat regularly. A lot of that dealing with folks who are trying to get into law enforcement and you know, having challenges for one reason or another. So always sensitive to that. Of course, retention is something we're very keenly aware is an issue, and always looking for ways to affordably improve that. So always welcome from the council or any members of the council from providing any insights or feedback to us as we work to tackle those issues in the legislature. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Representative Kirka, any comments with respect to any or all of the four applicants or nominees, I should say?
Not at this time.
Thank you. Representative Christ Tompkins, any comments with respect to the four applicants?
Nothing for me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Snyder, any comments?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to compliment all of these gentlemen on their service to their communities and their respective police forces and the correctional officer, and I appreciate their input today. Thank you.
And Representative Vance is not with us today. And then the only other, I would just note that I actually appreciate the fact that we have a couple of folks on the council that have experience on the council and a couple that are new to the council. I always think a kind of a blending of those that have been on the council already and those that are new lead to healthy debate and good discussions. And I appreciate all the applicants and impressed with their qualifications. And that brings us next, Representative Snyder.
Yes, Mr. Chair, one moment. The Judiciary Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends that the following names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration: Jeff Brown, Michael Craig, David Knapp, and David Ross to the Alaska Police Standards Council. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against these individuals. during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
The names will be forwarded to the joint session. Please be sure to stay behind to sign the confirmation committee report. I'd note that Representative Drummond and I are the only one in the committee room today. I'll ask my staff to hold on to the signature paper till about 3:15. If you're in the Capitol and want to stop by the office and sign it, we'll be happy to have that. But if you don't, we will submit it just with the two signatures that are here. And that brings us to our second and final order of business today, which is House Bill 5, Sexual Assault Definition of Consent, sponsored by Representative Tarr. This is the fourth hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee. And today I'd like to open public testimony on House Bill 5. And I'm going to start. Oh, actually, they're not in the room. We had two people to testify that were in the room. If you're on the phone, please make sure you're not on a speakerphone, as the sound quality is not as clear and it's often difficult to hear what you're saying. And I'll start with, hold on, I got to get to the list. We'll start with folks online, and the first person online to testify is Katie Botts. Ms. Botts, if you want to identify yourself for the record, we generally limit public testimony to 2 minutes in this committee, so if you want to proceed.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yes.
Okay, so good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Katie Boach, and I am a constituent of District 34. Before I begin, I would like to thank Representative Tarr and David Song for their hard work, their dedication to victims of sexual assault, and for continually showing up to your meetings, even when the chairman refuses to acknowledge them in the audience. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am frustrated down to the very core of my existence in relation to how this committee is handling HB5. I am a survivor of sexual assault, and in the past 2 years, I've attempted to advocate in numerous avenues for the passing of HB5. Instead, one or more members of this committee continue to ignore me. One or more of these members of this committee have continued to silence me. One or more of this committee clearly don't have a caring heart for victims of abuse. It's clearly a crime for me to advocate to the state legislators and wanting to look after my fellow constituents in Alaska and want them to have a better outcome than I received from the state, because I keep getting ignored. If I were to be valued, if our victims and our survivors of sexual abuse is important to you, then I respectfully request that the chairman of this committee set a deadline for amendment as of Monday, April 18th, which is in 2 days, because the actor speaks louder than words, and clearly he just does not care. HB5 is one more step in the right direction in keeping our victims safe. I was informed it was going to take multiple...
Ms. Botts, you're a little bit past the two-minute mark. If you could conclude your remarks, that would be great.
I was informed it would take more than one session to fix our crime laws, and this is the right step. And I just ask that you guys show by your actions that you do care about me and the victims of sexual assault by setting an amendment deadline and passing it out. Bye.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue, we have Cass Pook. Ms. Pook, if you want to identify yourself for the record, we tend to limit testimony to 2 minutes if you want to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I am from the community of Sitka. I am doing my Bachelor of Social Work internship at the Safe Shelter here in Sitka. And I am requesting that House Bill 5 be passed and be moved out of committee ASAP. And also Want to bring to attention ACEs at First Childhood Experience Studies, which is in a lot of strategic plans in the state as well as communities for victims of trauma, and also the NCTSN, the National Child Traumatic Stress Network, which would give information as far as data and information regarding trauma-informed victims. And I appreciate your time and commitment, and thank you for hearing me.
Thank you very much. While the last speaker was speaking, Representative Tarr joined us. Welcome, Representative Tarr. Next in the queue is Michael Patterson. Mr. Patterson, if you want to identify yourself for the record, please proceed.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me this opportunity to speak. I'm calling today. I live in Anchorage. I'm calling today because I support House Bill 5. For the last couple of years have been organizing around House Bill 5, and I have become much more educated on what House Bill 5 is trying to solve. And the reality is that, you know, I have met far too many people in this state that have told me that they are survivors or victims of sexual assault. I mean, literally a week ago I had someone tell me that, and it's constant. It's constant. And the fact that, you know, the amount of sexual assault that happens in this state is such a detriment to the state that I don't understand why it is taking so long to move House Bill 5 out of this committee. And, you know, I can only start to think that the reason why it's not being moved out of committee is for personal reasons and not necessarily legislative ones. And so what I'm really asking the committee to do is that this bill be moved out of this committee so it can go to whatever other process it needs to go to and become law, because I don't think this bill can solve the epidemic of sexual assault and sexual violence against Alaskans, but it is definitely a step in the right direction. And like I said before, I do not know why it is taking so, because it's not just four hearings this legislative session. This has been, we're going on years for House Bill 5 now. And so I don't understand why having an affirmative definition, a modern definition of consent in Alaska is somehow bad for Alaska. Because every year, you know, elected officials and politicians feel like, we care about sexual assault survivors. We care about sexual assault victims. But then when you actually have something that is a step in the right direction, that is a positive step in the right direction, suddenly it gets stuck in committee. And so, you know, I'm frankly just getting sick and tired of this. I know way too many people that have been victims and who are survivors. I'm a parent myself, and it's just ridiculous. And so how can we say that we live in a healthy and functional society here in Alaska when a large proportion of the people that live here can literally be sexually assaulted, and there's a loophole in the law that allows their attackers to get away with it? And if I wait,
Mr. Patterson, you're about at the 2-minute mark. If you could conclude, if you would conclude your remarks, that would be great.
Sure. I remember when Justin Snyder assaulted that woman, and then there was nothing that we could do about it. And then when the voters in the 3rd Judicial District voted him out, that suddenly the next legislative session, something happened.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue, we have Janice Park. Ms. Park, if you want to identify yourself for the record, please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Janice Park. I live in Anchorage in the new District 12, and I am calling in very strong support of passing HB 5 out of committee. I am a rape survivor. When I was 20 years old, I was abducted and raped by two men. And I had a lot of scars and visible signs of trauma that the police could use to verify my complaint. 10 years ago, my granddaughter was assaulted by someone with whom she had previously had a relationship in her college dorm in Illinois. And the case was not prosecuted because, well, one of the reasons it was not prosecuted was that she did not have any physical signs of trauma. She was so traumatized by the experience that she dropped out of college. She was going on a full ride and she lost all of her student aid. When she dropped out, she went back home and lived with her mom, and She came out as a rape survivor and was profiled in Sheryl Sandberg's book, Option B, as having overcome diversity. She did not tell me, and her mom did not tell me. And I didn't know until the book came out that she had tried to commit suicide more than once as a result of not being believed because she'd had no physical signs of trauma. And she did say no. And I don't know whether that would have made a difference in her case or not. But she has come to grips with that. She came out as a rape survivor. She crowdfunded and finished college at American University. And right now is in a senior...
Ms. Park, you're a little bit past the two-minute mark. If you want to conclude your remarks, that would be great.
She is in a senior policy enforcement position at Google. And I would ask you to think about other young people, and especially young women in that position, whose release and closure have been denied.
In the queue, we have Michelle Harpole. Ms. Harpole, if you want to identify yourself for the record, please proceed. Ms. Harpole, can you hear us? We'll go on to the next person in the queue, and maybe Ms. Harpole will join us in a moment. Jessica Stossel. Ms. Stossel, if you want to identify yourself for the record, you can proceed with your remarks.
I can't find the word. Good afternoon. I'd like to thank you, Chairman and committee members, for listening to my testimony. My name is Jessica Stossel, and I'm the Interim Executive Director here at the Center for Nonviolent Living in Fairbanks. I'd like to ask that House Bill 5 be moved out of committee as soon as possible. This bill is a step in the right direction for all Alaskans and victims of sexual assault. I've worked with victims for the last 23 years, and while I don't feel it's a full solution to sexual assault, it's definitely a start in supporting victims. And on a personal note, I have a young daughter who I have always thought, you know, there needs to be tighter laws surrounding young girls and boys that are the ages of 16 and 17. So thank you for hearing my testimony, and please pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue is Deborah O'Gara. Ms. O'Gara, if you want to identify yourself for the record, and please proceed with your remarks. Ms. O'Gara? We'll go to the next person in the queue, and we'll come back and give both Ms. Harpole and Ms. O'Gara another chance. Next in the queue is Jennifer Brown. Ms. Brown, are you with us?
I am with you. Thank you. Again, my name is Jennifer Brown. I live in Anchorage in District 20. I identify as a survivor of sexual assault, and for full disclosure, I also work for STAR, Standing Together Against Rape. And what I can tell you from personal experience and professional experience is that justice for victims of sexual assault and abuse is entirely too rare. It is too hard to reach prosecutions and get justice, and even harder to protect it. Those survivors. And so I am in full support of House Bill 5. Like other people have said, it's a step in the right direction for survivors of one of the most horrible things that can happen to a person to achieve justice. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you very much. And I note for those that their testimony was running long, you're certainly welcome to submit your testimony in writing, and we'll make sure that's part of the record. Looks like Ms. Harpole is no longer available, but Deborah O'Gara, Ms. O'Gara, can you hear us now?
Yes, I can. Thank you very much. My name is Deborah O'Gara. I'm with the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center, and I'm calling in support of this bill. And I know that there's been a number of hearings. I'm just going to briefly talk about some statistics. 21% of women have reported that they have been a victim of attempted or committed rape in their lifetime. And the majority of these women are raped before their 26th birthday. In essence, 20 million, almost 21 million women and girls have been raped in this country before their 25th birthday. And the reported rapes here in Alaska are twice the national average. And I say reported because many of the rapes are not, and sexual assaults are not actually reported. 47% of the sexual assaults in Alaska involve Alaska Native women and girls as the victims. Why are the sexual assaults reported numbers so low? Primarily it's because the rape kits were not processed, so I have to say that this problem is being resolved in the last couple of years. There's a distrust of law enforcement who in some areas are known to be aggressive, unhelpful, and insensitive. There's also slowness in the investigation. And then if for those few cases that do make it to the Department of Law for prosecution, those prosecutions are slow and sometimes non-existent. The sentencing and processing of the kits that are part of this bill only scratches the surface. What needs to happen is law enforcement and Department of Law need to understand what rape is and what sexual assault does to a person. Rape is like murder, as you've heard from the previous speakers. It kills a part of the victim, and part of that person is destroyed.
Ms. O'Gara, you're at about a little past the two-minute mark. If you could conclude your remarks, that would be great.
I certainly will. I want to live in a world where we do not teach our children how to cope and survive when they have been sexually assaulted, and I hope that every committee member wants that world as well. It's not right, and this bill needs to pass out of committee and move through the system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then we have just called in Jennifer Mitchell. Ms. Mitchell, if you want to identify yourself for the record, and please proceed with your remarks.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Mitchell. I'm from Anchorage. I'm recently a former victim advocate for Anchorage. I've worked at STAR formally for 7 years as a victim advocate, and I've worked with hundreds of victims throughout the state. I've been through more sexual assault reports than I can account, including being present for physical exams and helping victims through the criminal justice system. And although most of the people we work with come from Anchorage, I will be very upfront when I say that most of the cases that are turned down for these sexual assault reports that get turned down for any prosecution would see prosecution if we did change to affirmative consent. Alaska has a major issue with sexual assault, and if we want to start holding people accountable, this would be a very positive step in that direction. The other thing I wanted to share were two cases that I personally worked on for sexual assault by fraud to help clarify. Both are not prosecutable. Both were in a situation where a person was sleeping, had somebody come into their room that they had thought was their partner, had sex with them, then they had found out that it was not, in fact, their partner. And so, like I said, both are not prosecutable in Anchorage, but for one of the cases, the military was actually able to pick it up because they even have rules against sex by fraud. And so I really just urge everybody to pass this bill. And otherwise, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I don't have anybody else on the phone lines right now. We'll check again after we take. We have two people in the room to provide testimony. Brenda Stanfill, if you want to come forward. Please identify yourself for the record. Oh, I think we all know who you are, but identify yourself for the record, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Brenda Stanfill. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Thank you for allowing me to testify today on the importance of passing HB 5 out of the House Judiciary Committee during this April that has been designated Sexual Assault Awareness Month. HB 5 addresses four areas that have been identified as problematic in our current sexual assault laws and processes. Our current sexual assault laws require the use of force or threat of use of force, which has been interpreted in my 25 years of direct service work as if there are no marks to show resistance that force was used, the case does not go forward. Our current law does not make grown adults engaging in sexual behavior with youth 16 and 17 year old a crime. Our current law does not recognize that when fraud is used, it is rape. And our current law allows 1 year to process our SART kits. Our current law requiring force or threat of force does not reflect what our social norms are in our current social climate. Our youth are being taught how to determine if they have consent. They are being taught to ask permission. They are being taught that pressuring someone into having sex is not freely given sex. These are concepts that when I was in high school, which is about the time these sexual assault laws we have on our books were written, these were not things that we were taught. This law would require the accused to prove that they had consent rather than requiring the victim to have marks on their body to prove their lack of consent. Our current laws do not prohibit adults over 26 years of age from engaging in sexual behavior with a 16 or 17-year-old. This is often the gateway for grooming into sex trafficking. While you would hope that parents could intervene, oftentimes you have single-parent families working three jobs to keep the rent paid, and they are not always able to find a way to stop the grooming behavior from happening. Rape by fraud is truly a thing. I was here when Representative Tarr showed you all a video of that issue and the importance of that, of making this a crime. And the fourth thing this bill addresses in an area truly impactful to victims is reducing the amount of time the crime lab has to process SART kits to 6 months. I have attended the DPS budget hearings, and they have repeatedly said this is their goal and they can achieve this. Speeding up the process of testing forensic evidence will remove rapists off the streets and out of our communities much quicker, since oftentimes no arrest is done until the forensic evidence is tested. While these four changes to the sexual assault laws...
Yeah, a little past the two-minute mark, too, if you could.
It will not fix our current system. These are needed changes. These changes will enhance the laws and systems that our criminal justice system has to work with as we continue to address the issue of not enough public safety, a lack of prosecution, which we heard in a hearing yesterday was due to our low wages and no benefits, and the extensive time delays in trials, and a not nearly enough upfront work being done for prevention. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And also in the room, Lori Morton. Ms. Morton, if you want to come forward, identify yourself for the record, although I think we all know who you are, but still identify yourself for the record, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Laurie Morton. I live here in Juneau. Today, I am representing myself. I'm not identifying as a victim or a survivor. I will say, though, that I have lived through sexual assault. Rapare is a Latin phrase meaning to steal, seize, or carry away. It's where we get our word rape. Because, back in the day, I, as a woman, was not seen as a person. I was property. So a male relative could seek justice in court because their property was damaged. We have made some progress. I'm seen as a person now. But the narrative in the early parts of the 1900s through the 50s, maybe, was that only a stranger would rape you. So if you stayed within the confines of where you were supposed to be, you were going to be safe. Fast forward a little further, and it wasn't good girls. Good girls were safe. But if you were a bad girl, if you were at the wrong place, the wrong time, the wrong dress, the wrong attitude, you deserved it, and you got raped. We've made a little more progress. Now we, as a community, realize what girls and little boys and women have always known, what babies and elders know. The rapist will be a friend, a brother, a father, a husband. And it's my burden to say no. But not only that, I have to say hell no. And not only that, but if force isn't used against me, or if I don't fight hard enough, the crime isn't prosecutable. We should be uncomfortable with that. Be uncomfortable. Prosecuting sex offenses is an uphill struggle now. This isn't meant to make it easier. It's meant to make it right. It's past time we move away from a culture where I have to resist to where you have to get permission.
Ms. Morton, you two are past the two-minute mark. If you could conclude your remarks, that would be great.
Please do the right thing and pass House Bill 5 from committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see anyone else in the room, but we have added Philip Mosier online. Mr. Mosier, please identify yourself for the record, and you've got 2 minutes. Please proceed.
Hi. Yes, my name is Philip Mosier. I'm testifying on behalf of myself. From
Mr. Moser, just as a, are you on a speakerphone?
I'm not. No, I'm sorry. If my voice is too hard to hear right now, I'll need to...
That's much better. I'm not quite sure what you do, but it's much better. Please proceed. You can start over.
Okay. Thank you. My name is Philip Moser. I'm testifying on behalf of myself from the Mendenhall Valley. I'm testifying in support of this bill. I appreciate what it does to that consent, and I appreciate the amendments that have happened so far. I would still like to see, I like that the bill offers more language in terms of both consent and of rape as something that doesn't necessarily require penetration, which is a pretty dated definition of the term legally. So I would like to see this move out of committee. I don't have a lot of testimony that other testifiers haven't presented better. So, yes, I would just like to add my support, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I don't see anyone else in the room, and I don't see anyone else online, so I'm going to close public testimony in House Bill 5. And at this time, we'll hold the bill for further review. We'll now adjourn for the day. I'll note for committee members that we are not meeting on Monday, April 18. Our next meeting is Wednesday, April 20th, 1 p.m. If anyone is considering an amendment to Senate Bill 7, please let our office know and submit those amendments electronically by 5 p.m. on Thursday, April 21st. On a different topic this week, House Bill 416, Bonuses for Non-Union Public Employees, sponsored by the House Judiciary Committee, was introduced and referred to the House Finance Committee. This temporary act is modeled after a bill introduced and passed during the 21st legislature, House Bill 3002, Section 9, Chapter 2, temporary TSSLA 2000, which was referred to the House and Senate Finance Committees in May 2000, and apparently consistent with those practices, even though this was a House Bill 416 was a Judiciary Committee bill, it was not referred to the Judiciary Committee. So just a way of explanation, I know I spoke with all members of the committee before introducing it as a committee bill, and with that, we will stand adjourned. The time is now 2:05 p.m.